Words on Water.
Hi, welcome to Words on Water, a podcast from the Water Environment Federation. This is the host, Travis Loop. And for this episode, I am joined by Dr. Diane Rigos, a scientist, educator, and consultant interested in working across disciplines to promote sustainable solutions to global problems. She's the executive director of the Tata Center for Technology and Design at MIT. So I'm really excited to have someone with your background and credentials here to talk about science and water. Thank you for making some time.
Thank you for inviting me.
Could you kind of explain what you do at MIT at this center?
Yes. So the MIT Tata Center was founded actually in 2012 with money from the Tata Trust, which is a philanthropic group in India. And the purpose of the center is to develop new technologies that will have a really great impact in developing countries. So we care about technologies that are disruptive and can affect the lives of millions of people. And we work in six basic areas. Water is one of them. The other ones are agriculture, energy, environment, health, and housing. And what we do is we fund projects from MIT, or MIT professors will propose different projects to us. We have a committee that reviews all the proposals, and we choose projects that we think will have the greatest impact. And of course, our funding is limited, so we'd like to fund more, but we're limited to the amount of money we have for this kind of activity.
On the water front, could you talk about maybe some of the real challenges, or maybe some of the interesting projects that you funded, or what kind of disruptions you think are out there on the waterfront?
So we have right now about 60 projects total in all those different areas. This year, in fact, we ended up with 5 startups from our projects, and one of the most exciting startups is a water project. The name of the startup is Infinite Cooling. And what it does is it collects water from the cooling towers of big power plants. So I don't know if you've ever seen a nuclear power plant. It has these big cooling towers, and you see steam coming off the top. Well, that's due to evaporative cooling. And so the technology basically creates a mesh that goes over the top of an existing cooling tower. And what you can do is basically precipitate the water droplets, because we charge them first and you charge the mesh. And so we can collect 20 to 30% of the water that would be lost otherwise to the air. And that cuts down the cost of the operation of a power plant significantly. So, for example, if you had a 600 megawatt power plant, you spend about $5 million per year on water, and it would be $1 million per year.
That's significant.
And the other thing that's cool about this is that if you're cooling with salt water, so if you're on the ocean and using salt water, the water that you collect is fresh water.
You're here at WEFTEC as part of a scientist luncheon, and you're on a panel of scientists discussing the role of scientists today. What's your perspective on the role of scientists, particularly when it comes to sustainability and water?
Well, I think that scientists, and I'm probably not the norm, but I think scientists need to get out of the lab more and advocate for sustainability, because if they don't, who's going to do it? I think we don't work enough as scientists with policymakers, because sustainability is not a, you know, money-making operation. So we're not doing it to make money. We really need to have sustainable practices for the good of our society and our survival, right? So I think that's a really important thing that we need to do. And we also need to work across boundaries, because a lot of our sustainability problems, water sustainability problems, are global. and we need to learn from each other. And we don't have a lot of time because things are moving faster than we'd like them to move. So we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We can also share our knowledge and learn from others to make progress.
Things are moving faster in terms of just the rate of population growth and impacts of climate change and those types of stressors.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's very interesting. You talk about scientists becoming a little bit, taking on more of an advocacy role, being a little bit more vocal. As a communications person, I like to hear that. That sounds good. Is there anything that you've done to try to kind of do that yourself? I mean, you're here at a conference talking about it. That's great. But anything else you've done to try to be more of an advocate for science?
Well, my personal project is to try to train women scientists to be leaders in general, because I think you can change society and the world if you have more scientists as leaders. We don't really have enough scientists in leadership roles, and particularly we don't have enough women scientists.
I've seen like a quote from, I think, Neil deGrasse Tyson or whatever about, you know, the members of U.S. Congress and how many of these are scientists or, you know, so forth, and I don't think very many at all have a scientific background. Yeah, that's a great point. That's just in the U.S. here. I think there's probably some other countries and nations that have a little more diversity in their leadership. You know.
So another thing we're doing is I'm part of the Association for Women in Science, and we actually, as a group, go down to Washington once a year and advocate for issues that have to do with science. And so that's another way you can get involved.
You've worked in a variety of disciplines, not just water, but different areas. You mentioned energy and housing and sustainability in general and agriculture. What's your impression of the water sector? You know, the people that work in the water sector and also the water issues. What kind of thoughts do you have on that?
Well, I think the first thing is that water issues are not separate issues. They're connected to other issues. And I think the problem is we're always looking at things. You know, we're trained as scientists to just look at one little piece and try to solve that little piece, because we can't possibly solve the whole thing. But it's actually a system, and it's a very complex system. And so we need to think more in terms of all the other variables that affect water. Energy is one of the things. You can't have water if you don't have energy. You can't have clean water if you don't have energy. So one of the sustainable goals of the United Nations for water, sustainable development goals, is goal number 6. And it says that you want to ensure the availability and sustainable management of water and sanitation for all. And because I'm working on a global scale, I'm thinking about what's going on in the rest of the world, mm-hmm. not just what's going on in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
In 2015, 29% of the global population didn't have safe drinking water, and 61% did not have safe sanitation services.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? I mean, I think folks that are focused a little bit more internationally are familiar with that, but I think a lot of folks in the United States take for granted that we have clean water, we have sanitation, but it's a huge part of the world population that doesn't have those
vital things. Causes illnesses and death.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a health problem, too. So water is a health problem. It's an energy problem. They're all connected. Mm. And so unless we look and solve the problems together, we're not actually going to solve them. So just creating a filter that can clean the water isn't enough. You got to work on many fronts. And you have to partner with the local agencies and the local groups to get acceptability for some of the solutions, some of the new technologies that we come up with that are very disruptive. And affordable. That's our goal, is not just disruptive technology, but it has to be affordable so that it can affect and help the lives of millions of people.
Yeah. What are some of the leading challenges, I guess, when it comes to science and water?
Well, one of the challenges is that it is an interdisciplinary thing. I mean, water is not just chemistry. One of the things I learned since coming back to MIT, I've been gone. You know, I got my PhD at MIT, but then I came back recently for this position, is that water is not just in the chemistry department. It's in mechanical engineering. It's in chemical engineering. It's in all these different disciplines. So it's a very, you can look at water from many different perspectives, and some of the solutions require you to work with a team that's from many different disciplines. So I think working with people from other areas is really important for scientists, and they're not usually that comfortable, always. Some are not, to work in that way.
Why so, do you think?
Well, if you're a chemist, you know, you have your way of doing things, and if you're a physicist, you know, you do things a little differently, and it's just, you're trained that way. I mean, immediately when I first encountered a mechanical engineer working on water, I was like, oh my God, how could they possibly do it? Because they don't really know the chemistry.
You have different knowledge bases of different expertise. Be able to talk the same language.
You really need to work together. And I think I've learned that, you know, I value now their perspective, but I'm not sure that they always value my perspective. I think we need that on both sides, you know, all sides, basically.
I didn't have this question queued up for you, but what do you see in students these days as far as their interest and knowledge and passion for water issues?
I think one of the things, I mean, MIT is not your average place.
That's very true.
And I don't work with, you know, your average MIT students. I work with students who have committed to going out there and solving world problems. And they're very passionate, and we spend a lot of time in the field, and that really motivates them to solve the problems, because they see the children who are drinking the dirty water and who are sick. So it's not an abstract concept of, oh, there's dirty water out there. It's a real concept. And you see, you know, you see what conditions they're living in. Mm. And so you're much more motivated to come up with a solution.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Where are some of these places that you've worked and taken, you know, been there with students and so forth?
Different parts of India. We do some field work in Africa, but I have not been to Africa with the students. I mean, I lived in Africa myself when I was a child, so I know that perspective too.
Mm-hmm.
But I have not taken students. In India, we basically go to the villages and the slums and see the conditions there are really, I don't think your average American could live like that for one day.
This is your first time coming to WEFTEC, this big water conference. It's called the largest water quality event in the world, because we have, you know, 20,000 people that come here and look at a lot of water issues and technology. And so I'm just wondering about your impressions of the conference and the people that you've been able to interact with so far.
Well, I've actually amazed that there are that many people here. And in fact, it was a big problem at the airport yesterday because there was a giant traffic jam. So I got to get to know my fellow travelers really well, because we stood in line for 2 hours.
Oh, wow.
And then we were on the shuttle for another hour. So we really got to know each other, and everybody was very friendly. They're from different parts of the country, and we had great discussions.
Mm.
But there's so many people here. I don't even know how to navigate this. I was just thinking, you know, somehow you need like centers for different parts. And maybe they already are. I just haven't found them yet. I've been a little bit overwhelmed.
It is overwhelming. It can still be overwhelming for people that have been coming for multiple years. There's so many options of sessions and activities and tours and technology to look at. You really have to, it takes some time to kind of map out where you're going to be and what you're going to do. But that's one of the things I think that gives a lot of attendees some optimism and hope, is that seeing this many people that are involved in working for water all kind of come together on a regular basis. I really appreciate you taking some time to chat with us about this unique perspective, you know, from a scientist who's works in water, but on water, but not in water necessarily. So I really appreciate it so much.
Well, thank you so much, and good luck with all the things that you're doing at WEF.
Yeah, thank you.
Words on water.